All right, today is Sunday, January 31st, 2016. It's unbelievable. A week from now already is Shabbos Mevarchim and Rosh Chodesh Adar Aleph. And that means I open my freezer and start getting rid of any chametz that's left. Just relation to what I mentioned last Sunday in class, Nachum Lam wrote a few notes on Sunday's class. One of Jackie Mason's brothers, Reb Bernard Dov Mazer, was Rebbe of the Shul in Kew Gardens Hills. He passed away a few years ago. My brother used to lay in there every now and then. That's Nachum Lam's brother Shmuel. I recall that the brothers, meaning the Mason brothers, were actually close. The Shul used to have fundraising affairs to some of Jackie Mason's shows. I don't know how from Jackie Mason is, but he seems pretty traditional and very importantly in this day and age, very vocal in defending the Jewish people in Israel. So more or less, that's my feeling about Jackie Mason. Your mention of Rabbi Klapperman, I remember the gangster, and he had to eulogize him. Abraham Rothstein, a prominent figure in the Orthodox world of the 1920s, I spoke about him actually in the Monday class a few years ago. If you recall, I asked the class, you're sitting on chairs. These chairs are paid for by Yeshiva University. Among the donors to Yeshiva University was Arnold Rothstein, a gangster. How are you allowed to sit in chairs that some of the money traces back to a gangster, a murderer? Anyway, Abraham Rothstein, who was a member of the Jewish Center, was the father of Arnold Rothstein, who basically founded the mafia in the United States. When Arnold was gunned down, Rabbi Leo Young, his father's rabbi, spoke at the funeral. Years later, someone asked Rabbi Young about it, and he wrote a nice letter about how to speak properly at such a funeral. He essentially said and did what you did. So you remember what I said. Even a gangster, at least he treated his parents with their cheretz. At that moment, try to find what you can. I think in the 1970s, Washington Heights had gotten so bad that YU decided to move to New Jersey, a university there. I think Fairleigh Dickinson was moving and offered YU their old campus. Stern would have been on the same campus, and again, there was much opposition. Eventually, they decided against it and remained in Washington Heights. And I vaguely recall that, Alex. I wasn't living in America, but we heard something about it here. Anyway, we're in a very interesting world today, and I'll show you a story that comes in to the tshuva. And these are, you know, mainly, these are problems we all have to deal with. I don't say we're going to follow Reb Menashe Klein's viewpoint, but the problems are real. What we spoke about last week, going to a concert in Chol HaMoed, that famous concert in America where they canceled it after so much money was laid out. And he got involved not only with the usual question of men and women and singing and everything we spoke about and taking Shir HaShirim, turning it into a song, and the whole question of how you celebrate Chol HaMoed. And this is a serious question. And here we have a big advantage in the state of Israel, because anyone who's been here for Yontif knows the Yontif is very, very different. Chol HaMoed is very different. You feel it afm gas on the streets. The banks all close midday, and everyone is heading for the Kotel and Birchat Kohanim, and millions of people. It's a feeling that's unique. I only wish we didn't have the problems of the terror with it. Imagine kids are coming back from the Kotel last night and are stabbed by Arab teenagers. It breaks the heart. But it's a real problem. What I didn't tell you last week, and I meant to tell you, and I'll add an addendum to last week's shiur, is that the Ramaz, you all know, Rav Moshe Rissalies, was very learned in philosophy and mathematics. He knew a lot more. In other words, If I'm to believe all that they're saying about Lakewood and all that's going on today with the elitists, and we'll talk about it the week from this Monday in class on Monday morning, it ties in with the shiur. If I'm to believe it, So they don't accept daughters of certain people. If the father works, the daughter can't go to this elite Beit Yaakov school. So the Rama's children wouldn't be accepted into these schools because the Rama knew mathematics, he knew philosophy. He wrote a whole sefer, I think it's called Kabban Ola, you're the philosopher, the Rama's work. So the Rama, the Mashal, if you look into Shelet and Shuvat Rama, I think it's Tshuva Hey and Vav, very early, I think it's Hey and Vav. Right at the start, the Mashal corresponds with the Rama, and he rips the Rama apart for wasting time in learning general knowledge. And one of the defenses of the Rama, he says, you'll see it, that when do I study? He says, Yontif morning, everyone goes for a walk. Everyone is out walking. Yontif, the feeling, Chatzilachem, Chatzilashem, the Simchat Achag. And he says, while everyone is out walking, I'm studying general studies. So here's the Rama saying on Yontif, not just Cholamoid, that he's studying general studies and he's defending himself. So there's something to be said. Maybe you can make a case for Cholamoid that the Tiulim and Heshi Park and the kids and the amusement parks, at least let the kids do it in a kosher fashion. But in the state of Israel, Baruch Hashem, we have a real Cholamoid. All right, so that's what we spoke about last week. Then we got involved with Chelek Yudbet Simon Shin Chet, where he's asked from France about having classes in the shul, and do you need separate seating? And once again, when you hear a question like this, do you need a machitza? Do you need separate seating? There are various levels he discusses. And here, once again, when you have a question like this, you think of the Sri Deyesh. How the Sri Deyesh, leave it at 22, and leave it the way it is, it's fine. You're cold? Yomo, you're cold? You want to make it blow? Okay. I just don't want it to interfere with the recording because that makes a little noise. So you see, the Sri Deyesh also got the question from France, and he was makil with the singing, with Bnei Akiva, what they called Ezra there, a well-known shiva. Here, you have the question, you're teaching in the shul, and do you need a machitza? And then the question comes up with chatunot, with weddings. Do you need a machitza? And we ended off last week that Reb Menashe Klein, Yitzchak, you missed my introductory word, make it up, I had some interesting material. So Reb Menashe Klein takes the attitude, you don't need anyone to tell us, you don't need any source. If this person asked him, what are the sources? The Balabatan want to see the sources. I can understand that. I was in the rabbinate. You just can't come and pontificate in the rabbinate. You have to be able to give sources. So the Balabatan want to know, what are the sources? Why do we need a machitza and a shul at a wedding? So he says, from time immemorial, education has always been separate. The boys and girls have been separate. Maybe at the most, only in kindergarten do they have boys and girls together. But the minute they go beyond kindergarten, everything has to be separate. And that's where we got involved with the talk about Machon Lev, which is a true story. I don't know how they did it legally, but they fired the entire faculty. And at that point, because Professor Zev Lev had organized Machon Lev on a semi-Haredi basis, and the rabbinic faculty had veto power, it's like Lander College. When I visited Lander College a number of years ago, when my dear friend Rabbi Parnas, Teddy Parnas, Rabbi Yehuda Parnas was still active, he should have, you know, we're on in years, people grow older, they can't be that active anymore. So I understand he's not teaching now. But so Teddy, Rabbi Parnas boasted to me that unlike Yeshiva College, where the college is totally independent of the yeshiva and they hire the professors, they establish the courses, at Lander College, the Rebbeim have veto power. The classes have to meet their approval, and the teachers, whatever professor you're going to hire, has to be a role model of Yiddishkeit. So, I don't know, that's the way it was originally at Machon Lev. But evidently, when Professor Lev was no longer active, they went and they had the ability to fire everyone, and they made a condition, we'll rehire you, only on condition you accept the new rules and regulations, which totally took away veto power from the faculty, from the rabbinic faculty. Which yeshiva, what I told you is correct, Stern College, and I'm a living, I don't have to quote anyone, I lived it, my eyes, my hands signed, my ears heard, and I understand afterwards in the 70s when I spoke about before from Nachum Lehman's letter with the Fairleigh Dickinson campus. Yes, it's true. Fairleigh Dickinson downsized. They got rid of their dental school afterwards. Whatever was happening, there was a chance to get a major campus at next to nothing. And ultimately, yeshiva decided against it. The Rosh Yeshiva were opposed. So someone asked me a question this week, one of the people corresponding, did they have the same interaction like today? When I was at the Yeshiva University campus a year and a half ago, I was amazed to see how many Stern College girls were uptown and in the library and on the campus, and you could see them in the cafeteria. Was it like that many years ago when Stern College first began in, I believe it was 1954? And the answer is no. It was a different world. There was total separation. No one ever dreamt that there'd be one dean for Yeshiva College and Stern College. But I have to say the world has changed. I don't know if it's good or bad, but there's a different reality today. Lo aleinu, what high school kids in modern yeshiva high schools, so-called centrist yeshiva high schools, whatever word you want to use, what these children are exposed to at an early age. The Rav Yeshiva shook, and one day research will be done about this, but there was the dean's reception. Yitzchak and I can tell you about the dean's reception. It was the end of your junior year, I believe. They had a reception. You're going into your senior year. A year from now, you're going to graduate. A junior, your mind is still on yeshiva college, still on the experience. A year later, your mind is getting into graduate school. So at the end of the junior year, the dean would have a reception. It was called the dean's reception. And you could bring a date to the dean's reception. There was such a bitter machloket in the yeshiva. I saw it, I heard it, I saw the Rav arguing with Rav Mendel Zaks, the Chafetz Chaim's son-in-law, I saw the Rav arguing with Rav Yeruchim Gerelik, I heard Rav Yeruchim, and it was a tremendous argument. And of course, the attitude was from the Yudapayesh Rabbanim, whoever heard of boys and girls intermingling in a yeshiva, entails. We have to be honest, there was Yavne, there was an advanced Torah program for women. Tells was revolutionary as far as secular studies go in Europe. I'm not talking about America. They had a gymnasium where you got a real gymnasium degree. But I don't know whether the boys and girls ever met on campus. And the Rav's attitude was, and I heard this with my own ears, do me a favor, line up a few of the Torah Shraga boys. We should have a minion to daven. Okay, can you get a few of them? Go see if you can get a commitment from three or four of them to come up at 6:45, okay?
All right.
Okay, it's a chesed. Explain them a chesed, because they're older people here. We don't want to go out again at night. So, in Tells, I don't know if they ever met, but the Rav's attitude was, besser ze zon treffen eine die andere in the yeshiva than auf dem Gas. Better they should meet under the roof of the yeshiva than out in the street. All right, but this is a real problem. And, you know, the answer has to be with a lot of common sense. I don't think there's a halachic answer as much as a common sense answer. And it depends who you're dealing with, what the situation is, what the background is, what the values are. It's not a simple answer. But the problem is real. It's a problem we all live with. And today, particularly in the modern world, it's frightening. I tried to, my grandson arranged for me to download, gave me a link to Shtissel. So last night, I wanted to see Shtissel. And we had the link fine. And before I could do the next action on the computer, there's an advertisement there. I can't repeat to you how vulgar this book is. They're willing to give it to you, whatever. And it took me a few good minutes to get rid of that advertisement. There was no picture. It was just an announcement, the book, what it's about. And I can understand there's a problem. A kid goes to the computer and he sees an advertisement like that. He might go further. The title of the book, it's a teenage kid, his hormones are developing. He might go further. It's a problem, and we need a lot of siyata deshmaya. I'll only quote the Colin Stollen Rebbe, who was asked, and the Colin Stollen Rebbe will have a very big following. He's in Givatsev. I believe that person who was just in Shidlo Aleinu Thursday night walking to buy something in the Makolet with his wife, I believe he's a Kalim Stalin Chassid. He should have a refuah shleim. He was seriously injured. He's alive miraculously. They got him quick enough to start putting blood back into him. He was losing a fortune of blood. And the Colin Stoller is an American born, American raised, and a hatasach seichel, a lot of insight. And when he was asked about the iPod, I call it, if I'm calling it the right name, why you don't answer it, so he answered, I'm somech on my chassidim that they will make the right choice. And that, to my way of thinking, has to be the thrust of our education. The reality that we live in two worlds, the Gervitoshev, everything we've spoken about, uvachata b'chayim. And my grandson, I have one grandson who understands me very, very well. I have a number of grandsons. But this grandson, he always quotes my vod, that if you're demonstrating against the computer, I'm going to hold a bigger demonstration against cars. Since cars were invented, 31.5 million people were killed, everyday people are killed. Ritzicha! Why do we drive? Why do we have cars? Let's demonstrate against it.
It's very hard to do that.
It's very what?
There's such obvious chilukim you can make.
No. There's no chilukim. The answer is very... Please, the answer is you have to educate a person to drive properly. So we have to educate a person. There's going to be challenges in life on every level. And we hope you'll be smart enough and have enough love of Torah, your people, your past, your future, that you'll make the right decisions.
What about the decision about smoking, that the Rosh Hashivas don't
answer it? That's a sad story. Some Rosh Hashivas do answer it. And Rav Moshe David Tendler, I said this intuitively. I said in class maybe 30, 40 years ago that if Reb Moshe knew what we know today, how bad smoking is, he would have asked it. You know, that famous tshuva, what did he quote? To something with a tam. There's a quote that Reb Moshe used. And Reb Moshe David Tendler, speaking in Jerusalem, said, my father would have absolutely asked if he knew how bad smoking is. Okay, anyway, you can differentiate. But it's a problem. You can't hide all the filth in life. And I just wrote a letter today in Cleveland. The Flim Shul is having a night over homosexuality, trembling before God. A homosexual is speaking in public. And I wrote what I wrote.
In Cleveland,
in an Orthodox shul. It's not a shul within the framework of Tells, but it's an Orthodox shul. And
something that affiliates sort of broadly with YU?
And I don't know if it has anything to do with YU, but it's an OU shul for sure. And I told them that when you have a public affair like this, you justify the toeva. I said all research shows it's under 2% of animals and humans that are born with this tendency. But what you do, you have another 10% who are social homo. And I told them, I had experience teaching, I know what I'm talking about, I can give endless lectures, give you case studies. But when you make it acceptable, they come out of, they're out of the closet, it solves their problems, I'm a homo, I'm a lesbian, God have mercy. All right, anyway, that's my approach. And I don't want to say black and white if the Rav was right or if Mendel Zaks was right. But as a kid in the hallway, I can remember seeing the argument right outside Dr. Belkin's office, right next to Lamport Auditorium, and the office is there. And there's the Rav and Reb Mendel, and then Rabbi Yeruchim Gerelich joined in, and the Rav had his way, and in my time, you could bring a day to the dean's reception. Did I go? I don't even remember. I mean, I already had a girlfriend at that time, so I could have very well brought a date very easily. Okay, then he says, nevertheless, he says, I know they're making trouble. They want to know the sources. They want to know, why do we need a mechitza? And I understand the pressure you're under. And he says, I finally found the source. And here it's interesting, the source he comes up with. It's in a Mordechai. It's in Perikiran, Shabbat. Siman Shin Yud Aleph. And the Mordechai deals, the Gemara, they have a very interesting question. A question, by the way, that all of us have. Binyan Arai B'Shabbat. You're not allowed to build on Shabbat. Tell me, Alex, you go to your neighbor has a flock of kids, he wants to go to sleep for an hour in the afternoon, he throws Lego at the kids on Shabbat. Can the kids build Lego? No, interesting, who deals with this? Rabbi Avadya has a tshuva. All right, so what do we say about Lego? Lego, we say it's a binyan arai, it's not permanent, it's temporary. No, where else, Yitzchak, where did that problem come up? The umbrella on Shabbos. The Rav said, I'll never forget, the Rav said in class that we don't use an umbrella, but he knows that in Yerushalayim, when he visited Israel, in 35, so he saw some of the maskilim, Chachma Yisrael. See, here you have to understand something that some of you don't realize. When we say Chachma Yisrael with the Chokrim, some of them were Ga'onim. You have no idea. I mean, I give you a simple example. My classmate, Rabbi Dr. Professor Chaim Soloveitchik. Steve, how do you think of Chaim Soloveitchik? As a Rosh Yeshiva or as a professor? The answer is 90% of the people will tell you they think of him as a professor. He's a Choker. Well, he's a gone idea. You know, don't put these guys down.
He's also a very firm
man. No, almost everyone who was involved in Chochmat Yisrael with Shas and Paiskim was 100% firm. Professor Yaakov Katz, he never missed a minyan. What are you talking? We used to get a Birchat Kohanim from him every Shabbos morning. You follow? To know Yaakov Katz, a guy who called Torah Kula Baal Peh, but he was a Choker. His work, for instance, Goyshel Shabbat, right? That's his classic work among many other works. So you wouldn't classify Goyshel Shabbat a halachic sefer like the Mishnah Brura, Shmir Shabbat Kehilchata. But the Lundis he puts together, seeing the halacha with an sociological, economic framework, he was a gone idea. So you see, you take the people in Israel, Yudnun Epstein, up to it. I mean, Yudnun Epstein, these guys, Professor Albach, Hanoch Albach, you understand? YU, when we were in YU, you had Professor Avraham Weiss in Bernard Revel Graduate School. Professor Avraham Weiss knew Shas by heart. I mean, of course, he published maybe 9-10 books. He said himself, he once told me, no one understands my books. That was his boast. And what he did, do you remember, did you ever study with Professor Weiss? He would take sugyas and put them together chronologically. He would redo the whole pagination of Shas in accordance with the chronological order. And he was a gone out there. But this Chokrim, so you got to remember, when I talk about Chokrim, I'm not talking, I don't mean Mordechai Kaplan, Chas v'Chalila. I mean people who were firm. So the Rav said, they used umbrellas on Shabbos. So the Rav said, how do you use an umbrella? So they said, first of all, it's binyan arai. Okay? You don't leave it. But they said, we have a simple solution. If you want to be machmir with binyan arai, so we open it before Shabbos. All right, and there's an Erev in Yerushalayim. I got to tell you, it's not that easy to argue with them. Me'ika halacha. All right, none of us use an umbrella on Shabbos. But that's the famous story with Mordechai Kaplan. Remember I told you, maybe I told the story a few years ago. But here's Mordechai Kaplan, if you're familiar with his 1934 magnum opus, Judaism as a Civilization. Alright, I don't want to go into details now, but alright, it's not begoinis, but alright, it's a whole theory, what Judaism is about, how it evolved. There's basically no God in Mordechai Kaplan's world. It's a civilization. So there he is, Shabbos after it's pouring rain on the west side, he's walking with an umbrella. So a Jew comes over, Professor Kaplan, I don't understand you. Here you wear your handkerchiefs around your neck as a scarf, not to carry. And here you're carrying an umbrella. So Mordechai Kaplan, remember there was no Erev there. So you have a real problem. So Mordechai Kaplan says, for a civilization, you don't have to get sick. You follow? So that's Mordechai Kaplan. But I'm talking about from people. So Binyan Arai, an umbrella where there's an Erev, they made a whole case. No, where else do you come into this problem? Tell me, you daven, you have a shul, you daven in the main shul, the shul is still yours. I remember you when you had a side room, what was it, downstairs, right? We used to walk downstairs. So let's say you came in Shabbos morning, and the Friday night there had been an Oneg Shabbos there, you now have to put the mechitza up. You have to put the mechitza together. Don't you have in Grus, I was ready to say BMT, I'm moving the clock back. But in Grus, don't you have the mechitzat right where you walk into the base medrash in the closet there? So more women came than you expected, and they say to Yomo, Yomo, open up the closet and pull out a few, what would you call it? By the way, the word in Reb Moshe that I was looking for in his tshuva is Shomer Petayim Hashem. Reb Moshe quotes Shomer Petayim Hashem as if to say, all right, no harm will happen to you. But Chas v'Chalila, if he knew what we knew today, he might be a lot more stringent. But coming back here, you pull the mechitza out, you put it together. What's the chetta? Binyan Arai. Nu, the Mordechai is the source of the chetta. What does the Mordechai say? Mechitza she'osel et tzniut bi'alma. Mutta, a mechitza that you're just putting for tzniut, for the sake of argument, your sister came to visit Shabbos and is sleeping in your bedroom. My wife's mother would never allow, my wife told me, because I just heard a story where a brother and sister are sleeping in one room together, and my wife said her mother would never allow it. Alright, so let's say your sister is pouring rain, she can't go home, she has to sleep, she's an older girl, she's already a mature lady, so you put a mechitza between you, that's a mechitza letzniyot. So the Mordechai gives an example. I'm now quoting the Mordechai. Kegon mechitza she'osim bishat hadrasha bein anashim lenashim muta la'asoto bishabbat. Wow. That the Mordechai says, and he's quoted by everyone, all the way down to the last poskim. You'll see there's sources after sources. The Baal Tanya quotes him in the Rav Shulchan Aruch. The Aruch HaShulchan quotes him. You're going to teach a class on Shabbos. Men and women, you put a mechitza up. This is a mechitza for tzniut. It's a binyan arai. When the lecture is over, it's like Lego. You take it apart. So Rav Menashe Klein says, the Baal HaBatim want a source. This is the source. This is the Mordechai. This is a Rishon. This is a Talmud of the Maram Mirutenberg. Ain't Kleinigkeit, not a small matter. The Mordechai, wow, this is the source. Okay, now you have an unbelievable story here. And this story, this is what's unique about Reb Menashe Klein. It's not just halacha with him. He's a human being, and he brings himself into the tshuva. You can agree or disagree. I personally would not act this way. But he says, while I was writing this tshuva, niskama aser, I remember a story that happened to me by Tzeinu HaKadosha, that I was invited to a hotel to give a shir in front of Tefnei Anashim Mechubadim, very important people, honorable people. I'll give you my theory in a second. And I don't want to mention the place. You'll see why in a minute. I just want to mention it. What's he talking about? Probably talking about 2 years ago, I think it was Sukkot time, a year and a half ago, Sukkot time, good friends of ours, Ruth and Erwin Shapiro, came on a tour sponsored by the Spanish-Portuguese synagogue. The Spanish-Portuguese synagogue came with their rabbi, Rabbi Meir Yaakov Soloveitchik. And the Shapiro said, you got to hear Rabbi Soloveitchik. So we went to the hotel, we spent time with the Shapiros, and we went to hear Rabbi Meir Yaakov. I have to say, these people who come on a tour to Israel with the Spanish-Portuguese synagogue would qualify for the title Anashim Mechubadim. Okay? These were leaders of the Spanish-Portuguese synagogue. Among them, tremendous Balei Tzedakah, leaders of Klal Yisrael, donors to all the causes we believe in. These were Anashim Mechubadim. All right, Rabbi Soloveitchik gave his talk. I have to tell you, there was mixed seating there, a few hundred people, I would say, quite a number of outsiders, and he gave a very nice talk, time Thanksgiving together, Thanksgiving Day together with Sukkot, with the whole concept of giving thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, sources in Shas and sources in American history. It was a very nice talk, appropriate for Balabatim. I can tell you one person in the crowd who shall remain nameless, who I yet know from my rabbinate in Philadelphia in 61. So, very interesting guy, a professor, Torum Derech Eretz, of German origins. 15 minutes into the talk, he walked out. So I met him 2 weeks later in shul, and you know, when he was my balabas, I was a young rabbi, nothing. Today, I'm Rav Rakefet, Derech Eretz. So I say to him, how come you walked out in 15 minutes into Rabbi Soloveitchik's talk with your wife? You walked out the side door. He said, oh, you saw, you were there. I said, yeah, I was sitting in the middle. You were on the side. He says, I came to hear different Torah, not to hear jokes. And this is a Yaakov, but you know, when you have a popular audience, you got to tell a joke or two. You understand? The audience was not Gedolei Yisrael. It was Gedolei HaYahadut. But you got to tell a joke or two. He was very good. He knew how to handle the audience. So Rabbi Menashe Klein says he's invited to this hotel. Now, I would imagine it has to be the Merkaz. This is what I imagine. What did I call it today? The Prima Central. Did I give it a different name? The Merkaz was the first Frum hotel built in Yerushalayim, built by Rabbi Menachem Parish's family was involved. And it was the first Frum hotel in the sense, this was really everything Frum, everything with a mikvah in the hotel. And this is a hotel, you know, from people from Borough Park and Muncie and Chveis from Beverly Hills or other areas where you have Frum people who have made it in life, Hancock Park. This is a hotel for them. So it could be that's the hotel he's referring to. So he comes to the hotel, and remember, he probably stayed in Geula because he's a mechutin with the Gera family. Nebuch, his son-in-law, was killed by a bus, was a gone idea, was, I believe, Reb Yudim Simcha's son, and he would have been the next Gera Rebbe. They say he was a gone idea, and a bus killed him on Rehov Malcha Yisrael, Lo Aleinu. And this was, he was married to Reb Menashe Klein's daughter. So I'm sure he stayed in Geula, and if you know where the Merkaz is located, Kikar Pinis, it makes sense that this was the Merkaz Hotel. And he says, I came into the hotel, and I was absolutely shocked. I opened the door where I'm going to speak, and men and women are in one room without a mechitza. I immediately turned around, and I walked out, and they were very upset Mikoma kom lo vitati al kavod shamayim v'kavod hatorah. And I refuse to compromise. And everyone understands this is the way we have lived from time immemorial. Chas v'chalila, we should be poreid skeda like the moderns. This is the word he uses. Ha-hochim acha ha-eit osim sheyurim udroshet ukiyotzei bo yachad anashim v'nashim. And he's very sharp. V'lo lanu v'lahem livnot et Beit HaMikdash. We can't join with them in building the Beit HaMikdash. They have gone beyond the pale. They have gone off the path. And of course, what he's talking about here is a slippery slope. And this too is a struggle we all have to deal with. How much can we give into the times? How much of Western civilization can influence us? How much can we accept? Where do we draw the line? We are all struggling with that problem at this very moment. No one has the black and white perfect answer. I need not tell you, you talk about the right-wing world right now in New York, in London, in Belgium, and in Israel. There are endless lawsuits wending their ways through the courts, suing Rebbeim and the state for allowing it. How do you get away without teaching the core curriculum, mathematics, English, computers today? If you watch on the internet, endless reports from news, from channels in America, where they're doing investigation and they're interviewing Hasidim, they're still Hasidim, but they are so angry that they can't speak English properly, they can't write English, they can't read English, they didn't know the first thing about a computer. Where do we draw the line? People have to make a living, people have to go to work. Why is everyone condemned to be a truck driver delivering kosher poultry or baking kosher goods in pomegranate? You understand? It's a real delicate problem. All right, so then...
Then these are the people who go to modern Orthodox schools, though, should take a lawsuit out on them that they come to Torah Triba and they can't learn a Daf Gemara. They're not much further ahead than I was when I went to Chappelle's as a Baal Tshuva.
So what you're saying is something Rav Kefet has said many times over. You get a Baal Tshuva, and within 5 years, he's made up for what a kid has been in yeshiva for 10 years and wasted his time. No, we have a tremendous struggle here. You're absolutely right.
I'm just trying to make a contrast, but I want to tell you,
in modern Orthodox schools, you have kids who don't put on tefillin. Kids who don't daven unless you're looking at them and breathing down their back. And I don't want to go further with the sexual scene. And you see, this is America today. Sex has lost its beauty. Sex is no different than eating, drinking. It's a physical need. There's no love to it. There's no sanctity. But leave out the word sanctity, because it'll frighten people. There's no love. If a guy can eat in any restaurant at the age of 14 and have any, God have mercy what we're up against. So these are real problems. Then where do you compromise? Then if you saw Yisrael Hayom Friday, already in Efrat, there's a minyan that's halfway to Shira Hadasha. The women are reading the Haftorah, and the women are doing this, the women are doing that, the women are taking the Torah out, putting the Torah back, they have a mechitza. I gave Rabbi Miller the article, and you should know that this minyan, all the people running it, are students or spouses of someone named Darren Rakefet and someone named Rabbi David Miller. The rabbi who runs the minyan was our student in BMT, Rabbi Bolak from Switzerland. And he claims, you see, they all not going to say Rav Kefet approved this, because Rav Kefet's alive, he can yell and shout. Rabbi Ovadia Yosef approved it. No? Okay, go. But you see, this is so delicate. But I want to tell you, halacha lemaisa, if you feel there should be separate seating I'm not talking now about a mechitza, but if you feel there should be separate seating and you walk into a room and it's mixed, don't walk out. People are not going to understand you. All they're going to talk about afterwards is what a fanatic you are, what an extremist. Don't walk out. Give the shir. Halavai, we should have proper mechitzah at a time of davening. But to walk out is offensive. And Reb Menashe Klein, all right, kvodogim koma munach. But it's a very interesting tidbit that he brings into the tshuva. And he ends off by telling this young rabbi, show the balabatim, the Mordechai, this is tzniyat, this is what's required. And if the Mordechai says, this is what they did on Shabbat, they built a temporary mechitza, al achat kama v'kama, we need that mechitza today. Now, let me show you something. Torah tidbits, you all know what that is. Remember, I'm here before the OU, before YU got here. I can tell you when I first came to Israel, whenever there was a funeral here, they used to call me from New York, a YU funeral guy. I don't want to repeat some of the tragedies we had in America. And they were buried here. And I was the only one they would call. I was the only address. Baruch Hashem, OU started here, and YU started. And today, there's a tremendous presence. Richard Joe just boasted at his talk at the... Were you there, Yitzchak, at the... He boasted how many thousands of YU families have settled in Israel, and he says 15 to 20% of the graduates settle, and I believe, you know, those who settle after they retire, it makes the percentage much higher, and generally those who settle here have grandchildren here. It's good for the community, it brings in money, it brings in dollars, it brings in foreign currency, money is spent. And Ein Hara, it's a great, great achievement against all odds with all the difficulties. And you know, when you're far away and you hear the terrorist attacks, you can't envision that we're sitting in a classroom and teaching and everything is normal and wonderful, although we're going to jump when we hear the next round of news. So the OU really established something here. It began on Rehov Strauss. You don't remember. It began on Rehov Strauss. I remember speaking there. I was much more active then because I would speak out of the classroom. Today I tell everyone, you want to hear me, come to Gris. So it began on Rehov Strauss. It was very nice and they're really busy. I tell people, if you come in Aliyah, you can find classes for you, for your wife, literally around the clock, every day. There's so much going on here. No, years ago in the OU, no one would question, men and women come to classes together. It's not davening. That would be the attitude like in Israel. I need not tell you there's been a swing, what they call popularly a swing to the right. I would say perhaps it's not so much a swing to the right as more diuk in halacha. So what goes on at the OU? So let me tell you, I noticed in the latest issue of Torah Tidbits, this past Wednesday's issue, this past the Shabbat Yitro, here's an advertisement. Rabbi Pesach Kron will be giving a shir at the YOU Israel Center this Wednesday, 10:30 a.m., planting seeds and reaping rewards. 25 shekel if you're not a member, 20 shekel if you are a member, separate seating. Okay? You're told in advance, separate seating. Then you go to the list of classes, the whole week, what's going on, and you'll see, you're told in advance, Mommy and Me with Jackie. Who is this Mommy and Me? Mrs. Burrow resumes February 8th, 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. Mommy and Me with Jackie, men and women. Another class with Sura Frecha, women only. Another class, Pre-Chadash Writing Workshop, 5:20 p.m., women only. Tehillim Group, women only. And you go on and on. I guess they figured the Daf Yomi, they don't have to say men only, but in this day and age, there can be plenty of women who show up for the Daf Yomi. So we struggle with it. Halacha l'maaseh, I told you, my own feeling is, if someone will ask me, let's say, Rebbe, we'll do whatever you say. We have no preference. When I give the shiur, I would prefer separate seating. If I will always say, whatever your nohag, whatever your minag is, minag amakom, I will follow. I don't want to create, I'm there for one shiur, three shiurim. I don't want to create pandemonium. So if they sit separate, fine. If they sit mixed, I'll give the shiur. I'm not going to walk out like Reb Menashe Klein. But it's an interesting question. All right, now we go one step further, and I couldn't get over that this question was asked. I have often thought about it. It's fascinating. Chelek Yud Aleph, Siman Samach Bet. 1990. The addressee of the question is also fascinating. Right now in the United States of America, there's a world war going on that will one day be a doctoral thesis. I guarantee it. I did a master's on the Klivaget. One of my masters was on the Klivaget in 1766. My master's has actually been republished a number of times. You okay?
I'm all right.
Okay. My master's been republished a number of times. A fascinating story, the Klivaget 1766. Until today, we don't know the real answer to the question, but fascinating. Today, unfortunately, I'll mention the name as much as I hate to mention names, but the whole world knows, I'm not revealing anything, Tamar Epstein. It's a lady from Philadelphia. Michael Miller knows the family. She was married to a boy evidently from Baltimore, or they lived in Baltimore, he worked in Washington, and he refuses to give a get. And the little bit I know, and again, I can't have an opinion because I don't know. I mean, again, it's an area where law merits anochi. I don't want to plead ignorance here. I know the area well. I know it as well as anyone else. And I could give an opinion, but I would have to have all the facts at my fingertips, which I don't, and I can't get at. But he refuses to give a get, and she evidently claimed that he had psychiatric problems before they were married. She didn't know about it, and therefore it's a mekach ta'ut. And it seems a based in rule that it is a mekach ta'ut. On the Beitin, or the one who gave credence to the Beitin, the name that is flaunted is Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky. It seems that some Rav Shalom took care of it. It's based upon Shuvit of Rav Moshe that I've spoken about many times. Okay. I understand the report from the psychiatrist or the psychologist has been questioned. How you question that, I don't know, because we have a klal in Yoredeya, Uman Lomara Al Umanei, that a professional is not going to lie something that will affect his professional relationship, his professional reputation, his pirsomet, to use a modern Hebrew word. I don't know all the details, so much yelling, shouting, writing. Now, this tshuva is to someone who died recently, who was an Adam Gadol, Reb Ephraim Greenblatt, the author of the Riverboat Ephraim. He's an Israeli, came to America, studied with Reb Moshe. A Gaon Adir corresponded with Reb Moshe time and again. He was in Memphis, Tennessee, if I'm not mistaken, later. And he lost a fortune of money, by the way, to Madoff. He's the one I cried when I read it, how he said he had saved money. All his grandchildren live in Israel. And whenever they buy a dirah, he was able to give them $50,000 a piece. And now he says he can't even give $5,000. And he lost money to Madoff, which breaks the heart, because I know what it means, grandchildren buying apartments in Israel. So Tamar Epstein remarried, evidently. And who was Masada, the second marriage? Rabbi Frank Greenblatt's brother, Rabbi Nutter. Excuse me?
His uncle.
It's his uncle yet, but he's not that much older. Interesting. That's his uncle. They say he's an Adam Gadol. They tell me a big Talmud Chacham, Rabbi Hertz, tells me it's true. Rabbi Nutan Greenblatt. And he's under attack. I read, and I'll tell you, the machloket today, I have to admit, the machloket with the Cleves Get was very serious. I don't want to, I don't want to minimize it, because it helped bring about the ultimate triumph of the Haskalah movement over Torah Hashem Tamima. It terribly weakened the rabbinate. There were two tremendous machlokot, the Epshutz Emden controversy over the Shabtaut, and then the machloket over the Cleves Get, was it good or wasn't it good? They burned the Noda Behuda's writings in Frankfurt on the street. And the average Balabas said, if the rabbis fight like this, what good are the rabbis? And the Haskalah made tremendous inroads, as you know. So this machloket today with the internet, with the social media, is like everyone says, it's hard for me to adapt to it. But public opinion today is not created by rebbeim and by newspapers. It's created by virtual people who don't really exist in a tangible fashion. The internet, and you look at the internet, what's going on with some of the websites, some of the religious websites, the Torah websites, the Haredi websites, what's going on over this machloket. And it's Reb Nutan Greenblatt, who they say was Masadik tradition, and he evidently felt that the get was a reliable, that she didn't need a get, and that she was able to remarry. I cannot express an opinion. I don't really have all the facts at my fingertips, but on a simple level, it's following Reb Moshe. I had a similar tshuva to my neighbor, to Rabbi Nathan Drazen. I've told you this more than once. I repeat it again. I think in the volume coming out now, Rakafat Aaron Chelik 3, I think I write this clearly. The future generation should know. The tshuva is addressed to Rav Zev Drazen. Rav Zev Drazen was Nathan's older brother. He was a big Talmud Chacham. Rav Moshe knew him. Nathan, he knew, but it's like many times, if I have three brothers, I'll always call them by the name of the first brother. The first brother was Yisrael. It takes me a long time to master the names of the second and third brother. So Rav Moshe, Pleita Takunis, we call it in Rabbinic Hebrew, his pen slipped, and he wrote the tshuva to Reb Zeb. It's really to Reb Nassim, to Natan, to Nathan. Now, interestingly enough, just like this machloikis centers around Baltimore, where the Beit and Arsid are remarrying, that too was a case out of Baltimore. And the case was very, very similar, of a man who married, refused to give a get. And they uncovered, you know, a person who refuses to give a get. Rabbi Hertz, you heard me on the telephone a few minutes ago. What was I telling? I was talking with Brooklyn. And I told the Talmud, and you don't know what that story is. I cannot tell you the details. It's the only time ever was Masada Kedushin, and under the chuppah, the divorced parents of the Kala started fighting with each other in public, while I have to say Birchat Kedushin. I mean, God, what a rabbi goes through in life. And I got out of it one way or another, Baruch Hashem. So you heard me say that when a marriage is ended, when the woman wants out, you can't go for right or wrong. You can be totally right, but you're going to be wrong and harm the, you're going to harm the children no matter what. But the more you fight, the more you harm them. So I told him, Rabbi Hertz heard me say, you must give a get, period. Everything else is secondary. So that case, he didn't want to give a get. They found that he had mental treatment. He was hospitalized. He had problems. She didn't know about it. So there, Rav Moshe said, it's a mekach tot. And this gets us involved in the whole question of tam lemeitav du, me lemeitav amala. These are not simple halachic questions. You're dealing here with eshet ishkiri. You're not dealing here with yantav sheni shel galyet, yantav sheni, no matter what you do, you're right and you're wrong at the same time. There's no clear solution that solves everything.
Did people attack Reb Moshe when he wrote that? Or no,
Reb Moshe, not like this, not like this.
So this case is really just a question of the facts of the case? It's not
well, it's. I'll put it this way. If the facts would be as clear as Reb Moshe, the attack would certainly be modified. You're always going to have attacks. Reb Moshe with AID, that's where they attacked him. Something went crazy. Reb Moshe ultimately had to disconnect his phone. They called him in the middle of the night. What went on? One tremendous disgrace. Anyway, this is the recipient of the tshuva, Reb Ephraim Greenblatt. I'm glad you told me that's his uncle, because I understand he's slightly older. He's in his early 90s. Yeah. And Reb Ephraim Greenblatt
was a brother.
Was a younger son. Was a much younger brother, and Reb Ephraim, because he was in his early 80s, I think, when he died. So to me, that's a chiddush. I thought it's a brother. Took for granted it's a brother. Thank you. Anyway, this question is unbelievable. He says, Reb Menashe Klein says to me, "I got you a wonderful letter, what is Reb Ephraim talking about?" I mean, women would be embarrassed by what he says here, but women, he says, Nashim Dabraniyat. Women like to talk a lot. All right, gossip. Is that true today? Do they gossip more than men? I'll only say this, all the gossip columns in the world, including the Israeli newspapers, it's women. You follow? And even the Jerusalem Post is Greer Cashman, Faye Greer Cashman. So all the gossip columns I see are women. So maybe women do talk more than men, I don't know. My wife talks less than I do, that much I can tell you. So Reb Ephraim Greenblatt decided in Memphis, Tennessee, to give Sheurim in the shul on Shmirat HaLashon. Okay? Shmirat HaLashon, you understand, not to gossip, and you know, to know what you can answer, what you can't. You know, listen, they're very serious questions here. If someone asked you, "My daughter's going out with this boy that you know, what type of boy is he?" Then you go to a teacher, "What type of student is he?" In Israel, he served in the army. You get a hold of his mafaked, and you'll ask the mafaked, "What type of soldier?" And by the way, you should know, of all the questions, that's the most important. Because a mafaked in the army sees a person under tension. You understand? Bikiso, bikoso, bikaso. Underline bikaso. And if you're under tension, you know what it means? And leave alone normal. What if you're at war? You fought and your mafaked saw you in battle and how you acted.
Are they allowed to speak about
that? I don't know. I would imagine they're not allowed.
Yeah.
But people are people, and what can I tell you? All the memoir books that come out about Rabin, about Peres, about Barak, you understand? People are people. People gossip, what can I tell you? So he's giving Sherman shul. So he wants to know, while he's giving the shir, and it's for a very important reason, they shouldn't gossip. Women are sitting there knitting. No? How many times has this happened that a rabbi gives a shir and women are knitting, making kippot, making scarves, making sweaters for grandchildren, for little children? Maisim b'chol yom. I've had this, I've seen it. In Michalav, of course, there was a rule. I taught in Michalav for 15 years. I taught in Machon Gold for 18 years. There were rules. You weren't allowed to sew, to knit, to what's the word? Lisrog, lisrog kipas shruga, to crochet. Thank you, crochet. Again, you've lived in Israel too long when you think in Hebrew, not in English. Lisrog kipas become, you know, that word today, shrugim. He's a who may hamigzach hasrugi. I mean, it's unbelievable how that's become a verb, a noun, an adjective, an adverb. Okay, are they allowed to do it in shul, or is this, you know, an infringement of kedushat Beit HaKnesset? Beit HaKnesset is a mikdash miyat, and I want to tell you, when I came in Aliyah, the president of Machon Lev was a YU graduate named Zvi Weinberger. And I meet Zvi, I knew him in the 50s, I knew him well, and the president of Machon Lev, and I'm teaching here, it's before there's even a Kollel, I'm teaching, I get this building for BMT, and I meet Zvi, and wow, president of Machon Lev, Talmud Chacham, scholar, scientist, and he says to me, the last time we spoke, you rebuked me for doing mathematics in the Beis Medrash in YU, the Harry Fisher Beis Medrash. He was doing mathematics, and I rebuked him. I told him, how do you do mathematics in a Beis Medrash? Chuvda d'chol, a Beis Medrash is for learning. This is the question. I don't know if I was right or wrong. It could be you can make a case that Al Tanayiv knew that our synagogues outside of Eretz Yisrael are built on Tanai. Even in Eretz Yisrael, I remember when they dedicated the great synagogue, they made a Tanai that they should be able to have weddings in the great synagogue. You understand? Al Tanai. The Gemara in Megillah, the whole sugya in Megillah. So, this is the question that he asked. Can I give the shayurim and have the women come lishmoa shayurim divrei Elokim chayim? And remember, these are shayurim for women only. It's not mixed. It's not a question here of mixed. It's women only. Or ilo habize beklal kalit rosh lebeit hakneset. Or is this kalit rosh? It's a disgrace for the synagogue. Ay, gentlemen, poor Ephraim Greenbath. He asked an innocent question. Reb Menashe Klein absolutely cut his head off. You will not believe what he writes in the tshuva and what he uncovers. I don't know if we'll uncover it today, but the little hair that some of us have left will disappear when we hear what he uncovers. Believe me. He says, my dear friend, Ahuvi Yedidi, you asked a wonderful question, but I'm not worried about your question. It's not the question of sewing or knitting or crocheting in the synagogue. I have a more basic question. What are women doing in the shul? Women have no place in the synagogue. And he says, and this is true. He says, yes, the sugya is at the end of Megillah. We can use the synagogue at times for tzorech harabim, and this is brought down in halacha, brought down in the Shulchan Aruch. You can use the synagogue for tzorech harabim because yontif, Shabbos, let's say, I remember the yeshiva when the neighborhood in Washington Heights started going bad, they would have meetings in the shul on Shabbos with the local residents to discuss what was happening. And the only time people were free to come was on Shabbos. All the other days they worked. Sunday, Jews had stores, Jews were in business, Jews had catering establishments. But Shabbos, big crowds in Washington Heights could get together to discuss the Tzorech HaRabim. He says, yes, you can use the shul for tzorech harabim. He says, in chutz laretz, it's certainly easier lahakel from what I just said a moment ago, because the batei kenisiyot and baba were built al tanai. Moshe, they were built so you could have meetings there. But in Eretz Yisrael, there's no tanai. But these are security factors. Public good, public welfare, public health. But women, since when are they allowed into the shul? And now he takes a Gemara that we've all learned, and he takes a few words out of context, and he builds its case. He's amazing. It's a Gemara Moed Katan. It's the first Gemara he takes. Daf Yud Chet Omer Aleph. And the Gemara tells a story that Reb Yochanan, that Reb Shemin Baraba, one of the Amoraim in front of Reb Yochanan in the Beit Medrash in Chol HaMoed, cut his nails and threw them on the floor. What's going on here? Cut his nails and threw them on the floor. You all know occasionally we use a Dr. Shaw device, cut our nails. I know if I let my nails grow too long, they break. So I know every few place 2 weeks, I have to cut my nails 3 weeks. So Gemara says, we learned three different concepts from here. Shmamina, number one, it's permissible to cut nails on Chol HaMoed. It's not a malacha. It's not something that's forbidden. Shmamina, ein bechem mishum miyus, that it's not something egelhaftik, ma'us. Again, English, how would we say it? Something disgusting. You know, cut nails, what are you doing? Do that privately. No, it's like blowing your nose. No one is going to say, we're all human beings, you blow your nose. On the other hand, if you're going to spit out of your mouth, that's something you're not going to do in public. Cutting the nails, ein bechem miyus. And finally, we see if you cut your nails, you can throw them on the floor. So the Gemara asks, I remember learning this as a kid. I was so impressed that, wait a minute, there are three standards in relation to cutting nails. If you bury them, you're a tzaddik. If you burn them, you're a chassid. And if you throw them on a floor, you are a rasha. Look. I don't say we have to bury them or burn them. Put them into a garbage pail. Right or wrong. By the way, al pi Kabbalah, there is something to nails. It's part of the human body, etc., etc. So there is something to burying them or burning them. But all right, I'm not a Kabbalist. I'm a Litvak. Throw it into the garbage.
Is that what?
Hold on. Why are you... A rasha if you throw it on the floor? And the Gemara answers, it's the Gemara's answer, I'm quoting word by word, we're apprehensive lest a pregnant woman will walk by, step on the nails, and she will miscarry. So if that's the case, if you're apprehensive lest a pregnant woman walk by and she will miscarry, how do you throw the nails on the floor of the base medrash? And the Gemara answers, Isha beit medrasha lo shechicha. That a woman is not found in the beit medrash. No, I would learn that Gemara. Yoma would say to me, Rebbe, what does the Gemara mean? I would say it means, look, 99% of the time, a woman isn't in the Beis Medrash. It's logical. Go down to the Beis Medrash downstairs. I don't think there are any women there. Go into the YU Beis Medrash, the old one, the new one. I don't think there are any women there.
Beis Medrash,
I'm sure. But he derives from this that a woman has no place in a Beit Medrash, in a Beit Knesset. It is a man's domain. And this is the first Gemara he quotes. And he hits him over the head. Mamish hits him over the head. You're asking me about knitting and sewing and crocheting. What the heck is a woman doing in the Beit Medrash? You can't believe what's going to be uncovered in this tshuva. It is beyond words. But he's first gearing up. He had a very innovative mind. In a million years, I wouldn't have taken that Gemara, Yisha b'megedesh lo shchicha. What does that have to do with giving a shir and Lashon Hara in Memphis, Tennessee, in the synagogue? But a woman, no place.
Not the first one that made that connection.
I don't know. We'll see another Gemara in a minute. Very fascinating.
Why do you find this fascinating when the man is definitely excluding the whole thing?
Rabbi Rubin, wait till you see what he develops further, and you'll see his insight that at times we don't comprehend him in our world, and at times he's smarter than you and I put together to the second power.
You will wait.
And wait till the source he uncovers. You will not sleep tonight, because it turns out Chovei Beitor is right. We are wrong. Yeah. But Yitzchak, a basic statement to answer you is, to be open-minded is very important. I want to understand Reb Menashe Klein, the world he's coming from, because wait till you see some of the questions he gets about Balei Tshuva and women and Nidr and Mikvah. It is beyond comprehension what he has to deal with. And you'll see, at times he deals with it fabulously. At times he's coming from his world, you understand? And it gives us insight why the Haredi world can't comprehend us. If we want to lead and set the way and light the torch that the Haredi world can go out into the big world and they can deal with core curriculum, and we are pacing the way as people who did it successfully and remained in Torah Hashem Tamima, you have to understand where they're coming from. And there's things I'll reveal about Reb Menashe Klein with his attitude towards women, but not yet. I have to get there in Ebenezer. What I know, I will reveal publicly. God should give me strength. I need years to do this, but we'll get there. Be'ezrat Hashem. Wow. Takes the Gemara, black and white. Yo, yes, I haven't said anything yet. Go ahead, Yomo, Adarabba. What's your problem? Yitzchak's problem. So what's your problem?
The Gemara doesn't talk about women in the Beis Medrash. Who came to the Beis Medrash?
The Gemara talks, right, and Rak Brua, you listening to the Beis Medrash?
Not Brua, but the lady whose husband died young, and she came with a tefillin to she went around the Beis Medrash.
Right. No, there are other Gemaras. You can come up.
So Shkia doesn't mean they never...
Lo Shkia, exactly.
To argue his point, he could probably respond and say, we're not talking about one case where a woman comes to
We're not talking about
Right.
learning on a permanent basis.
Yeah.
Okay. Then he quotes the Gemara in Kiddushin. Look this Gemara up. You're going to see a very, very fascinating sugya. Daf Nun Bet Omid Bet. And the Gemara is talking about Kodshim Kadoshim, Kodshim Kalim, what you can do with it. And does it belong to you? Doesn't it belong to you? And the Mishnah begins, Hamakadesh Bechelko, Ben Kodshim Kadoshim, Ben Kodshim Kalim, Eina Mekudeshet. Because it doesn't belong to you, plain and simple. It belongs, you're Mishulchan Gavoa Kozachi, but it's not really yours. All right, and the Gemara goes on, it discusses, and then the Gemara tells an unbelievable story. Tana Rabbanan, Liacha Petiratol Sher Rabbi Meir, when Rabbi Meir died, Omalechem Rabbi Yehuda Letalmidav, Rabbi Yehuda told his students. See, this is the Gemara, Alex. I'm happy to see you back. I hope you were matzliach with the Wexner Foundation. I just wrote a letter to a member of that family, a two-page letter, to give Chizuk, the Kabakal. He's on the Board of Trustees, Bernard Doctor, with his daughter and all that's happened. But that's for another time. I'm happy to see you back. But you see, when we learn Gemara, the Gemaras we're interested in is the Gemara that deals with halacha. What's the halacha? What do we do? Halacha lemaisa. What's the lumdis? The Gemara I'm now quoting, the Chachmei Yisrael love, because it sheds light on the relationship of Amorayim, the times they lived, the power they had. If you heard my lectures 20 years ago on Chachmat Yisrael versus classic Talmud Torah, you understand what I'm saying.
Are any of those recorded? Or
yeah, it's on the YU. It's part of the Tishbi of Torah in modern times. It's in the first year or two, whatever. They advertised those lectures on YU Torah, yeah. So here Rabbi Meir says, Rabbi Meir died, Rabbi Yehuda says to his students, don't let Rabbi Meir's Talmidim into my classes, into my lectures. Why? Mipnei shekantarim chen v'lo lilmol Torah chen ba'im ela lekapcheni b'halachot chen ba'im. Because they're a bunch of cantankerous individuals. The word, it's actually in English, kantaranim him. Cantankerous individuals. They are coming in to fight. They're not coming in to learn. They're coming in to catch me, to show that I made a mistake. All right, so right away, Chachmat Yisrael would now go to all the other Gemaras that mention Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, and what's their relationship? And then you have a broader question, what happened in Gemara Brachot when you keep out the Talmidim and they're not worthy? Ran Hillel Hazaken, you have to pay money to get in. The whole question of an open base medrash or a closed base medrash. You follow? Fascinating. Dachak Sumchus v'nichnas. And Sumchus, a Talmud of Rabbi Meir, pushed his way in. He beat the hell out of a few students, let's say, got through the bodyguards, got in. The Shomrim couldn't stop him. Omar Lehem. And in this sugya, Kach Shonali Rabbi Meir Hamakadosh Bechelko Ben Kodesh Kadoshim Ben Kodshim Kalim Loki Desh. And he says, Rabbi Meir taught me that if you're Makadosh, a coin, Kodshim Kalim, Kodshim, it's not a good Kadoshim. Kahas Rabbi Yehuda Aleihem. Rabbi Yehuda got very angry. Omalahem, lo kach amati lechem, al yikonsumi tamidi Rabbi Meir lekan, mipnei shen kataragim chem, velo lidmo Torah hem ba'im, ela lekapcheni b'halochat hem ba'im. So what's he saying? He's getting all upset because he tried to differentiate before between kachim kalim and kachim kadoshim, and it depends where you're being Makadesh, and he's getting all upset. What did some of us do that was so terrible? I mean, he's basically quoting a Mishnah. He's quoting Rabbi Meir's opinion in the Mishnah. What's he getting so upset? And Rabbi Yehuda says, V'chi isha bi'azara minayin. What is a woman doing in the Azara? How could this ever happen? A woman has no place here. She doesn't belong here. What are we talking about? The Azara. Look into Rashi. V'nashim meinich nasotla k'detan bi'ovatat tuma b'perikama d'mesechet kelim. Women become tmeah. They have periods. They menstruate. What are we talking about here? How can a woman come into the Azara? It never happens. And then, Omar Rabbi Yossi, Yomru, people will say, Meir Shachav, Rabbi Meir died, Yehuda Kas, Rabbi Yehuda got angry, Yossi Shotak, Rabbi Yossi was silent, didn't have an answer. Divrei Torah Matechei Alecha. What will be with Divrei Torah? So he says, V'chin Ein Adam Asui lekabel kedushin lebito bazara? Can't the father be mekadesh his daughter in two bagrut? Can't the father? Doesn't the father have the right to marry off his daughter? This is one of the classic problems that Rav Menashe Klein deals with a bitter divorce case in Brooklyn, in the United States, where the guy wants to take revenge against his wife, and he says, I will be mekadesh our daughter to a man and never reveal who, and the girl is, let's say, 10 years old. The father has that power. Never reveal who. The daughter can never marry. Remember this? Remember Hertz? This was halacha lemaisa. Oh, what went on?
Remember?
Unbelievable, unbelievable. And we're not going to get to it now. But he says, what's the big deal? The father took Kesef Kedushin in the Azara, took the chelik of the Kaban. The Yeni Shah Suila Sotla Shliach Kabel Kedushin be Azara. And can't the woman make a Shliach? Don't we know in relation to Kedushin, Aish Makadesh, Bobo Shlucho? And just as a man can make a Shliach, a woman can make a Shliach Kabel Kedushin? Wow. V'od, docha kaven nichnas ma. What about if the woman pushed her way in? In other words, you'll see in Tosfot, I'll call Tosfot in a minute, but she forced her way in. She beat the heck out of the Shomrim. She dodged in. She played a football game with them. She got in. My, it's a good question. Why are you mad at Sumchus? And then the Gemara says, Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Mekudeshet, Rabbi Yossi Omer Eina Mekudeshet. It is a machloket in the halacha. And Tosfot says, what does it mean, V'chi Yishah Ba'azorah Minayin? That it means, Ein Regilot Shetikanes L'Shem Kedei L'Hitkadesh. That a woman to go into the Azara, it could be the Ezra of Noshim a woman did go into. There was part of the Beit HaMikdash where women went into, where we allowed women to go. And by the way, this is all halacha lemaisa with the whole question of women coming to shul in general, with the whole question of menstruation. Haray, but to go in, to get married in the Azara, this is a bizayon. What are you doing? What's going on? What are you playing games? This is the Makam HaMikdash. It's not a place where you get married. The Milta de lo Shchiachi. And it's something that doesn't happen often. It's once in a Yoivo. The lo Ayres Tana Bezeh. The Tana can't be possibly talking about such a situation. Gentlemen, what do we see from this Gemara? He derives one simple thought that what did the Gemara say? V'chi isha ba'azara minayim. There are places where a woman belongs and places where a woman doesn't belong. So Rav Menashe Klein is shouting, he's furious. You're asking me a question, knitting, sewing, crocheting, and I want to know how are women allowed into a shul to hear a class? What are they doing for? Doing there? How do you bring women into the shul? Gentlemen, we will leave off at this point. I just want to review. You want to get us a few talmidim? Excuse me? We have a minion.
Danny Kaplan may come.
And Shai, you can stay?
Yes.
Okay. Danny Kaplan may come.
Danny Kaplan, and someone walked out. Who walked out? Alex. So Alex will come back. Okay. Yeah, what are you showing me? So what are you showing me? That she went into the Beis HaMikdash?
On the safe Diyosh.
But what are you trying to show me? She saved him, okay? Vayechi ita beveit Hashem. Mitchabei Sheish Shanim. So here this is Melachim Bet, Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Gimel, and Vatalya Molechet Al Haaretz. So you have a different problem there. How do you have a Malkah, the Lo Melech, and all that goes with Srara?
Not to tell you, there's someone who saved him, so she was with him in the...
But she was with him. Be it as it may, here's another example, but you can take Tosfot, that it's Lo Shriach, the Kadesh, Baruch Hashem. Okay, to reiterate, what have we said? We finished that last week's Tshuva, the whole question of Mechitza. And what's amazing is how he tells the story. He opens the door, sees them sitting without a mechitza, and he walks out. I ended off by showing you the OU. No one there has. I don't believe anyone speaks to men and women with a mechitza. I may be wrong. I don't believe so. But some of the speakers insist upon separate seating, and evidently Rabbi Pesach Krohn insists upon separate seating. On the other hand, their classes...
Never seen that
in OZ. Excuse me?
Never saw that in OZ.
Never saw
I
what?
I saw him every time I talk him into it.
Okay, yeah. But when he used to talk about Ozzy periodically.
Oh, you're talking about that, Rabbi Pesach Krohn, that Ozzy. All right, I can only tell you what I read. Maybe this is a lachat chilar and there it's a bidiyevid, okay?
He's more Haredi, you know, or
no, beside the be it as it may. Then we started Rabbi Ephraim Grunblatt, and that is very fascinating. Rabbi Ephraim Grunblatt and his brother and contemporary news, and the question he asks and the answer he gets is completely different. My dear students, I wouldn't miss next Sunday's shiur. What we're going to go into at the start of shiur and then follow up, it is unbelievable what the implications are. If anyone told me that this source exists, I'd said, I don't believe it, you're pulling my leg. But the source is there, and Rav Menashe Klein actually uncovers it, and wow, it has unbelievable political implications at this moment in time, but I have to quote it, it's there.
To quote you yourself,
yeah.
Because the halakha is made up of a consensus, not just a dasyon.
Right, of course.
The consensus of 1,000 years is that women do rosh.
Of course, we'll come to it. Absolutely. Even he backs down. You'll see. Relax. But he's talking not to daven. How do they come in? Stam into the Azara. A lot to give out today and tomorrow. This is the Chabad Weekly. It's about a Japanese Baal Tshuva in Beit Shemesh. I'm told that there's a number of them. It's an unbelievable story how they come to Yiddishkeit as the religion, as the true, and convert kedat v'kedin. Here are two publications. One I already gave out. I got another copy. You can compare it. This is Chabad dealing with Yutet Kislev, and this is from Yateid, I believe. It's the Litvisher approach to how to be a good Jew in this world. And they quote here from all the famous Gedolim in the Litvishe Yeshiva world. Here's an article on Rav Shlomo Gorin's father and how the family got to Israel. Very fascinating. Here's a YU article on Rabbi David Bleich, one of the Rosh Yeshiva, one of the Rebbeim. Many some of you studied with him. Here's an article on Rav Shimon Shkup. I wish the author would have contacted me. I could have given him information why Rav Shimon left. I asked Rav Shmuel Belkin. I don't have to daydream. Here's an article written by a YU graduate dealing with Chovevei Torah and how upset he is. Here's a fabulous article, what's going on in Bnei Brak, the coffee war over the opening of Kofix and the mentality Rakepit writes about it in Washington. Eating on the street, Ocho B'Shuk Doma L'Telef, the quote to Gemara. And here are two copies of an article on Leif Toha. It's the group from Montreal, which has run away to Guatemala, and it's accused of being a sect. It's interesting, and see how you react to it. Tomorrow morning, we have a world to do unbelievable material. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya. Who will say Bahurachum? We have a Baal Tefillah here. Moshe, take over.